Let's face it, running a construction company can be chaotic. As business owners, we wear a lot of hats and we're constantly putting out fires. Luckily, there's a way to work simpler with BuilderTrend. I'm a huge advocate for using technology to help run AFT, and BuilderTrend is one of the most crucial tools I rely on to keep me on top of every detail. Built just for home builders and remodelers, this is an easy-to-use platform that helps manage all aspects of my business. My team's been using BuilderTrend's project management platform for the last 5 years, and we love that they're always improving and adding new features to make our lives easier. This is something that we've really tried to take on internally to find ways to improve our system every day. BuilderTrend just released a full set of financial services, added new tools like Takeoff to make estimates more accurate, and launched a total rebrand with a new mission to help change the future of construction, and we are on board. To learn more about how BuilderTrend can help calm the chaos in your construction business, visit buildatrend.com/AFT. When you schedule a demo, you'll receive an exclusive 60-day money-back guarantee only available to my podcast listeners. I'm following BuilderTrend into the future in construction. Come on board with us. Don't miss the Contractors Coalition Summit. You can go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com and join us in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th. This is going to be an incredible event. Again, for all of you builders and designers looking to take your business to the next level, to learn about all things systems, organization, pricing, social media, marketing, how to be a better business owner, all the things that we wish we knew as early business owners many years ago. We're going to speak about that, also give you a Dropbox with all the content, including contracts and other documents that we're using, as well as KPIs, key performance indicators. So don't miss it. It's a huge opportunity. Some amazing vendors will be there as well that you can network with. So again, Wednesday, May 15th through Sunday, May 19th, 2024 in Minneapolis, go to contractorscoalitionsummit.com.
It's been baked largely into our culture because of experiences that people have had or their parents or grandparents have had, that building a custom home is a massive challenge and is going to be ripe for challenges and stress. And as you and I both know, if done correctly, the vast majority of all of that stress and challenge can go away.
Very excited for the podcast today. We have Keith Galbit on with us. Welcome, Keith.
It's great to be here. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and we're a little spoiled. Keith is here local to Phoenix in Scottsdale, and I know that you have a presence all over, but Keith is the president of Advocate Residential Construction Advisors. And, you know, this is one of those topics that I've been wanting to have on for a long time, Keith. We haven't had a construction advocate on before, so welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be with you.
Yeah, it's going to be good because, you know, in my experience, I think builders all over the country have had different experiences, you know, positive and negative when they work with, you know, a third party company, a, you know, construction advocate, construction manager, you know, owner's rep, you know, there's a lot of different terms out there. Mm-hmm. Before we get into maybe that aspect, the relationship with just you, you know, pushing the project as the need for this, right? The need for this profession, biggest issue you've seen between clients and, you know, construction companies, for example.
Well, I think the biggest issue and the biggest area or opportunity for doing things better is doing excellent pre-construction work. The vast majority of projects that I've seen in terms of this business, and I think, as you know, I've been a practicing lawyer for about 20 years, and one of the reasons I started Advocate is I kept seeing repeated patterns of errors that then created much bigger challenges. And in most circumstances, that was related to a failure to do really excellent pre-construction work, where people started moving and constructing before they knew really where they were going. And then changes would occur midstream. Those changes would impact budget. They'd impact schedule. The tensions would rise. A number of those things would happen. And suddenly the relationship is challenged. And in most cases, in fact, I'd say the vast majority of cases, good people trying to do good work, trying to make good decisions, based on not doing the right kind of planning up front, there were enough opportunities for errors to enter into the situation that would create challenges to the project. And so I think that's a huge area of opportunity, frankly, for shoring up. And you're all about this, I know. And I think there are obviously many great builders who do a fabulous job at doing that, but we see lots of circumstances where that work hasn't been done as well as it could be or should be. Second, I think the selection of the general contractor, really understanding what it's going to be like to be married for the period of the build, really understanding their philosophy, the way they interact with clients, what the structure is of their organization, and the alignment and needs of the owner. And as you know, it varies from project to project. Some cases, you have projects where the owner is local and they're very attentive and very responsive and available. And you have projects where people don't live here. And you have different motivations and different timelines. And so there needs to be a good amount of upfront discussion around how does this process going to look at scale and making sure that there's a lot of alignment. I think those are probably the two biggest areas of, I guess, of opportunity or we see challenges that really could have been done much better.
Those are great examples. We're going to break these down a little bit because maybe I piggy-tail off this last one you mentioned before I get into the pre-con and, you know, the general contractor selection and essentially that marriage that happens. But I found that it's, you know, as I've spoken to peers who have had whatever experience with their owner's rep, they've always asked me and I've said, you know, honestly, I've had great experiences. And fortunately, we have. And the biggest reason is that most of us know as builders, like that there's a couple parts of this. One, you mentioned owner availability. Owners have businesses, they have families, they have a lot of things happening in their world, right? Some of them are local, they're not. Communication, accessibility is really important. And I found that, you know, when I work with the owner's rep that has a philosophy that, hey, I'm here to not, we're trying to get rid of these plugs in the system, right? That are slowing everything down. Mm-hmm. And it could be, as you mentioned, it could be the builder and their lack of systems. It could be the owner for their lack of decision-making. I know for us, when you have essentially a third party that's driving the process, getting answers, getting selections, when I need something, it kind of softens it a little bit. I'm not going straight to the client saying, hey, Keith, I need this answer. You hate me because I'm like driving you down. You know, I can actually go to Keith as the advocate and say, hey, Keith, I really need this information. You have enough construction experience to understand why, you know how it drives it. I saw recently we had a project with COVID, right? Pricing's going all over. We're super transparent with our clients. We're notifying them. And it was nice when the owner's rep's like, hey, I'm working on these other projects around the country. This is valid. Brad's not, you know, pulling your tail or anything. Like, this is a real thing.
That's right. Well, I think it's been baked largely into our culture because of experiences that people have had or their parents or grandparents or what have you have had that, you know, building a custom home is a massive challenge and is going to be ripe for challenges and stress and all of these things. And as you and I both know, if done correctly, the vast majority of all of that stress and challenge can go away, can be managed, can be mitigated. And so because a lot of builders, a lot of the selections of builders, a lot of the pre-construction work are not done to the right level, people are already viewing these kinds of conversations between an owner and a general contractor as being kind of me versus the other. And that's, of course, totally the wrong attitude in a build of the kinds of projects that your firm and our firm are doing. There has to be a very team-oriented, problem-solving approach. And so, and part of that is for the owner's rep as a trusted advisor to the owner to be able to call a spade a spade. I mean, a lot of times owners are unwilling to face the music of a changed circumstance or of a selection that they've made or of an input that they're trying to put into a project. And there needs to be straight talk because if you don't address it early, it's only going to become a bigger problem, of course, as time goes by. And there's often this view that, which is most of the time incorrect, frankly, that you know, hey, the general contractor is telling me what's really in their interest, or they're not really being as transparent to me as they should be. And, you know, in our view, having an objective party there who can talk truth to the owner and talk truth to the other team members as is required, depending on what's going on, is a really important part for a productive and cooperative team. And that's certainly part of our role, is to be direct and clear and to explain. And look, in the experience that we've all been through in this COVID environment with massive demands on supply chain and massive demands on general contractors and subcontractors and all the way through, there have been a lot of changing circumstances, and it needs a real team approach to solve that, because really none of us have ever been through those kinds of pressures in such a concentrated period of time. And for all of us that were working on projects during that period, it takes a lot of focus, as you know so well, to really keep things shored up and looking around the corners, finding ways to be thoughtful and make good decisions. And it's all about teamwork, you know, at that stage.
I really love your philosophy too, as you've broken that down, Keith, and you touched on pre-construction in the beginning. I thought that was really interesting. The reason being is, over my personal experience, you know, early on to now, you know, in the network of builders that you and I have, there's a comment that was made. They said, you know, from a peer of mine that's been building for like 60 years, Richard Jaffa, he builds up in Utah in Park City. And he said, he's always told me, he said, Brad, builders die of indigestion more than they do starvation, right? We have a tendency, whether we're poor financial managers, cash flow, and so a project comes in, we're trying to get more projects in the pipeline, more deposits, you know, working through cash flow, and it creates chaos. And the reality, sometimes a client may come in like, hey, I have this tight timeline. We want to make them happy. We start the project too soon. It could be a remodel, it could be a new build, and we don't have all the information. And what ends up happening is those projects always take longer. They become super, you know, a lot of tension between clients and us as the builder. I found myself now in my career, you know, 11 years in, that we spend way more time in pre-construction than we did in the past, right? It's your team and the projects I've worked on with you, Keith, like very detailed in the pre-comp process and the questions. I know it's somewhat of an easy answer, even though it's more complicated than this, but why is pre-construction so important? You know, just on a few things I touched on, plus your experience in the 20 years you've been litigating and, you know, working through the chaos of us, you know, as builders.
Yeah. Well, so, I'll answer the question first by just going backwards in time. For me, you know, I've, worked as a lawyer, not just on the dispute side, but, you know, supported developers and owners and contractors and general contractors and you name it. I understand that ecosystem. And through that experience, both on the transactional side and on challenges, we'll call them, I've seen a lot of patterns. And those patterns were very present to me. And then my wife and I were fortunate enough to build a home. And I applied those best practices as I knew them at the time. Certainly a more developed you know, grouping of understanding today, but I applied those lessons to try to shore up and, you know, reduce the possibility of there being challenges during my build. And I've seen, you know, these repeating patterns. And so one of the main repeating patterns to your question is that we all want to serve our clients. They want to get moving. They're excited. They're emotionally committed to the project. They have dreams, they have their children, and they're, you know, they look forward to all the events and things that they're going to have. And we, as professionals, want to please them. But we know, as people who have been in this space for a long time, if we go down a path which is undefined or largely undefined, I mean, there is no build that's perfectly defined and never changes. And that's not the environment we want to create either. But the reality is we can be blinded by the excitement and the optimism, or the excitement and optimism of our clients, and want to proceed. And as you and I both know, well, you know, a big part, you know, close to oftentimes 50% of the cost of the house is in the finishes. The range in cost for those finishes can vary a great deal depending on the selections that are made. If changes are made to the build, you know, what is the structure of the home in addition to those elements? And then we add in, you know, all the bells and whistles, the audio, video, the automation, landscaping, et cetera. Things can get unwieldy quick relative to what were the original expectations that were set. And then we get into this big challenge of, what is often called value engineering, but is really lopping off things that people wanted to do and their dreams were often around. And certainly there are opportunities for shoring that up and mitigating it, but it's a process that is kind of backwards, right? The better approach is to define where we're going, establish appropriate guardrails, manage the design to those expectations, select a general contractor with the same vision and the same role, and then execute that plan. That's not how it often happens, as you know, outside of your organization. It's often go to architect, dreams are put into paper, it then goes to a bid process, it's 50% over what was spent, then general contractor is often brought in, and there's this uncomfortable process of trying to figure out how to shore up what's been designed to be buildable by the client. And that's just backwards, as I know you know. And the way to solve that is through the pre-construction process, really being clear about where we're going and then keeping everyone disciplined to create plans that are consistent with those objectives. And that's what we really work hard on doing at Advocate. And that's a big part of what we've learned too over the years and how to do better every day is that the pre-construction piece is really mission critical towards mitigating the vast majority of those what would be future challenges.
I love that you spoke about that, because when I teed up the pre-construction process, you broke it down that it's different for both reasons, right? I look at the pre-con different. That's very different for me, going through the organization. For you, it's completely different, right? As you're the owner's rep. And my experience has been, working with someone such as yourself, Keith, and your team, is when you're coming in early, you understand what's going to make the project successful, right? If you have that design team, builder, architect, designer involved, and there's some other, professionals from landscape and lighting possibly, but essentially when you talk about the selection of the general contractor, it's not, hey, we like this person's personality, we like their social media. I mean, you're going down deep into how do you do your punch list, right? How do you close out a home? How do you operate? What does the communication look like? I mean, there's questions here. So you're doing a highly vetted process for pre-construction. So that now you're putting the project in the best opportunity for success, because you've essentially vetted the client, asking questions that the client may not even think about asking because they don't know, right? This isn't their expertise, even though they may be ultra successful in their field. And that's where you come in to say, no, we're going to ask the right questions. We're going to put the right team. We're going to do the vetting. We're going to do some background stuff. And then that way, and you're doing the same thing with the architect and designer. So you're putting the best team in place possible to now make this project successful from day one to completion.
Yeah. I mean, that's really our objective. That's what we're trying to accomplish, and appreciate putting it forward that way. I mean, to us, we don't pick and choose the winners. Our job is to curate the process and to do our best to inform our clients so they can make informed decisions at every step of the way. We help to bring out that information through the interviews of each of the team members, and we call that team selection is what we call it internally. So it's architecture, interiors, assisting with the engineering selection, and then helping ultimately with the general contractor selection and through that process. And so what we try to really do is curate, either because the client has identified people they might want to work with, or we've identified people that could be a good fit for a particular project. And as you know, projects, vary greatly. A Paradise Valley or Scottsdale hillside modern home is a different build than a smaller and or a flatter project with other types of architecture. And there's different builders and different team members who have different skill sets that can be applied to each of those projects. And so what we try to do is curate, here are a great grouping of architects you might want to consider. Let's look at what they are, and then we'll dial it down to a small group. We'll have and curate conversations with them and with their team so that the client can really understand what it would be like to work with them. What will this experience be like? How do they operate? What's the timing? What's the schedule? And certainly, the cost side too. But the reality is most of our clients, they're all sensitive to cost. They, as they should be, they're good stewards of their resources. And we certainly encourage and want to support that. But the reality is of the homes that we're working on, that's one of the factors. but not necessarily the most important factor, and often is not the most important factor. It's about the quality of what they want to build, the architecture that they want, the interior design, the look, the feel, the experience that they want to have for their family. And so we're working really hard at pulling out those data points through these conversations so that our client can make an informed decision. And from the perspective of the general contractor, one of our core beliefs is that everyone gets a fair seat at the table. You know, this process can work differently depending on how things have evolved, you know, and how a general contractor is often selected when we're not involved. But our view is, let's be clear, let's be transparent, let's give each general contractor who's being considered an opportunity to display what it is they're all about. We ask the same questions. You know, certainly additional follow-ups can be different, but we ask the same questions in a way that allows for everyone to really perform and explain to a client what it would be like to work with them, and provide them that objective information and also the subjective that we learn, and allow a client to really direct us as to, you know, what makes the most sense. And certainly we have an opinion, but interestingly enough, sometimes our opinion is not where the client wants to go, you know, particularly on the selection of design and architecture. And that's great. You know, we're here to be stewards and we have an opinion, but we're really trying to help them make informed decisions. And I think that's a big part of where things often go wrong. You know, sometimes a friend says to a friend, hey, pick this person as your architect or this person as your interiors person. And I know this person who could be a good builder, and they might be, all three of them might be excellent, but they might not be the right people for a particular project. And we see that as a common theme too. So our view is let's get a good analysis done that allows people to make informed decisions. And when that happens, typically magic happens. It's really not magic, but it can feel like magic because everyone's getting along and it's a good fit. And that's a big part, I think, to the art of making it work right.
That's very well said. And what I really like about that, you know, Keith, is when you talked about a fair seat at the table, or essentially curating information, very open about the decision. Yeah, you're going to gather the information, all the intel, if you will, present it to the client, they're going to make their decision. But at least you've asked the questions, you've inquired, you've done the research. I know your relationship as an owner's rep, you know, and an advocate for the client comes in many forms, right? In a perfect scenario, I'd imagine you're in day one, you're working with the team, going through this curation and the questions you're putting together and the information for the client. I'm sure there are some instances where a project's gone south for whatever reason and the client brings you in and now you're coming to midstream. How do you work through the logistics when it's not, you know, in this perfect scenario where you're kind of vetting everybody from the beginning, you're coming in late down the process, and now you're trying to essentially salvage a project that have had issues and could be painful emotionally for a lot of the parties involved?
Yeah. Well, it's a great question. And, you know, a big part of why I started having, as I mentioned, is that I spent a lot of my life dealing in those circumstances and being part of those circumstances on behalf of different groups, you know, the builders, in some cases owners, in some cases, et cetera. It's an art form, to be direct, in terms of how to manage those things. And it's something that the advocate firm, about 30 or 40% of our projects are in the category of what we call a project turnaround. And what that is right-sizing a project. In some cases, it's getting everyone realigned and really trying to find a path forward. In some cases, the relationships are so broken by the time that we're invited to be part of it that it's very difficult to create and optimize the team going forward. We certainly really try hard to make that happen because the institutional knowledge that's in the builder or that's in the different team members is really important to the success ultimately of completing the project. But sometimes that's not the case. And so what we do, and when we're in those circumstances, and we are, often, is to first sit down with each and say, look, you know, here are the ground rules. You know, we got a project. It's not functioning properly at this point. It can either go down a path of being optimized and we figure this out together and we all pitch in and work it out, or where changes are going to be made and we first work to get buy-in by everyone that we're all committed, even though it's not going to be fun, right? In parts, committed to a positive outcome. And then we start really trying to break it down and look at it from an objective standpoint of, okay, what are the issues? What are the roadblocks to solving those issues? What buy-in do we need? What compromises do we need that are appropriate and fair to everyone to go forward? And we're quite good, forgive me for the lack of humility, but we're pretty good at it. But it isn't fun, really, because you know everyone's upset by the time we come in. And this is part of why we love doing projects and really getting it right from the beginning. But it is an important part of what we do. And you know what we find from the owners is that our clients is that this is often like such a massive stress point for them, their spouses, their children are hearing about it. It's the topic of conversation with friends and family. And so that removing that level of intensity from their personal lives is why we really love doing it, you know, to try to figure out how to shore it up. And what we offer to the construction community is we speak your language. We understand largely what you're dealing with. We are empathetic to that and to those changes. And we know that in all cases, it's never one person's fault or responsibility that something has turned out to be challenging. It's always a combination of things. And so we work to be mindful of that and, again, call a spade where necessary, wherever direction that is, and really try to get people to shore it up. And we treat everyone that's involved fairly and transparently. You know, there are no there's no gamesmanship. That's not our style. It's like, okay, here's a situation. This is what we need to do to work to resolve it. Are you in? And then we start working on trying to, you know, eat an elephant one bite at a time, you know, and trying to shore things up and get things as right-sized as possible. And the vast majority of the time, I would say 90%+ of the time, we're able to do that successfully. And sometimes, you know, parties just can't come to terms with a resolution and, you know, becomes more challenging, but, you know, that's not an optimal outcome most of the time and, or every time. And so, you know, we work really hard at trying to get everyone to be reasonable and come to a mediated result.
This episode is brought to you by Pella Windows. When it comes to building homes at AFT, almost every project has Pella Windows. And they've been just an incredible partner of ours. And locally, Sammy and Adam, they are not only amazing business partners behind us, but they are super close friends. And I speak on the podcast all the time about the importance of relationships, right? Relationships with our customers, with our vendors, with our suppliers. Because at the end of the day, I'm only as good as those that help our brand and assist us in our projects to take it from the ground up all the way to completion. And if we didn't have partners such as Pella, there's no way we'd be who we are today. Over the years, we've built this amazing relationship. When we call them or email them, they respond. They're quick. Their company culture, their integrity, their honesty. You know, they are always there to do what's right for us and the customer. They can do anything from small replacement projects to large custom homes and even multi-million-dollar commercial projects. And also, when you think about their product line, they can do ultra contemporary, historical preservation, and large traditional projects. So for anyone, any scale, any size, they're the ones to call. They're here local. You know, they have an amazing Instagram. Make sure and give them a follow to see what they're doing. So if you need windows and doors, give Sammy and Adam a call. We stand behind Pella. We love what they do, their culture, their brand, and especially their quality. And if you want to learn more about Pella Windows, check our show notes. We'll have everything tagged there so you can give them a follow and have their contact information to reach out.
Our clients have worked with the Sub-Zero Wolf & Co. showroom Scottsdale on nearly every project. They make the process so easy for us and our customers with either an in-person or virtual consultation. They have dedicated consultants to answer questions, provide helpful solutions, and offer advice and assistance. When you are ready to embark on your kitchen journey, reach out to the Sub-Zero Wolf & Cove showroom, Scottsdale, who will tailor an immersive, rewarding experience just for you in their stunning showroom. Gather ideas, ask questions, and imagine how your dream kitchen might come to life. All catered to you in a low-pressure and highly inspiring environment. View an array of options and see what they look like in full-size kitchen vignettes. And attend a chef-led demonstration to see and taste these appliances in action.
I love how you broke that down. And I think in fairness to you, Keith, I think you said it pretty lightly when there's some multi-layers going on and you know, it can be pretty complicated, you know, why the project is where it is. Early in my career, 15 years ago, I was on a pretty renowned project, and there had to be a change for different reasons. It was a housing recession. So there were some other things involved. It wasn't so much a owner builder thing. There were some other outliers, but they brought in another owner's rep to kind of help the bank did to help to get finished. And it's complicated. And the projects you're working on are extremely complicated. How has, you know, you touched on this early on in the conversation, your legal background, right? You've been practicing law for 20 years, 21 years, and here you are now as the advocate, you know, working with your clients. You know, walk through your legal background, kind of cases, maybe not specific cases you worked on, but how that's prepared you, as you mentioned, to be very professional, diplomatic as you come in and investigate these now and get these up and running.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the question. So I'm fortunate to have been born and raised here in this community in the Phoenix, Paradise Valley, Scottsdale area. My parents moved here from Chicago in the early 70s. I was born in the mid 70s, approaching 50 here in a month or two.
And happy early birthday.
thank you. And my father's a lawyer. In addition to being best buddies, you know, I've watched and worked with him over many years, and I've seen I've seen all the recessions that I've been alive for through his eyes. And then, you know, ultimately as a business person and as a lawyer, and I've gotten conditioned to kind of how that all works and how it should work. And I've seen countless examples at this point in my life. And so I went away for school, studied economics, came back, worked for a big accounting firm for a while. So I have kind of finance and accounting background, got a master's in finance, and then went to law school. And when I started practicing law, I very quickly became very excited about entrepreneurship and about working with small and medium-sized companies. And the beauty of doing that work is you see all kinds of things, as I know you know, and you speak a lot about entrepreneurship. And you see the good, the bad, the ugly. You see best practices. You see folks who are really focused on continuous improvement and the change of their long-term outcomes, and people who are kind of not shoring up the decision-making that they should in terms of making good decisions. And so I've been conditioned over all these years towards working with and supporting good decision-making, frankly, and then trying to resolve things when challenges occur. And so our clients are, on the law firm side, typically entrepreneurs, represent a bunch of kind of household brands in Arizona, you know, fun brands. And because I've been doing it now for 20 years, and the firm has a history going back into the mid 1980s. And lots of developers, lots of restaurateurs, professional service providers, contractors, and I've seen it from lots of angles. And so to me, that's the best part of being a lawyer is being exposed to really creative minds on businesses and for families that are really trying to achieve great things and trying my best or our best as a group to support that happening. And the byproduct of that is you get seasoned. You know, you see things that were really outstanding outcomes, and you see challenges, and you learn from those, and you help your clients learn from those. And that's a big part of how Advocate was born, because I just saw over and over again these consistent patterns that were occurring, and they were, you know, for baseball fans, you know, they were just unforced errors. I mean, they shouldn't have happened, and there was a better way. And that's why we started it, to really become better stewards of the process. And certainly the owner is the center of our worldview in terms of how we're advancing a project. But the team is really how the magic happens. You know, curating that team, holding everyone accountable, us being held accountable to, including the owner being held accountable, is, you know, the basis of great business, and it's a great basis of a really great construction project, right? I mean, what is the strategy here? What is our objective? Making sure everyone's aligned to that is what we work very hard at doing. And it's really a direct application of all those years of experience doing legal work in terms of planning and strategy and execution. And the hope, of course, is that on the back end of it, there isn't a challenge. There isn't a dispute. It's really about, you know, positively addressing the outcome of a project. And in our experience, you know, while our name is advocate, and, you know, the extension of that is adversarial, you know, we're advocates in terms of advancing the owner's interests, but we are not an adversarial group in that sense. We are very much about teamwork and about high-performing teams. And we've recognized, you know, look, in the commercial space, owner's reps have a reputation of kind of coming in, focus, dropping a shoulder to focus on cost and schedule, and kind of are disruptive, are often not team players, and are not productive to the process. And there's a role in the commercial space for, you know, certain of these approaches. I would argue that there's better ways to do it often, but mm-hmm. that's how it often is. In the residential space, that's not how it can work or should work. The people who are doing that work are going to run into big headwinds because, you know, a great builder has views as to how they want to perform their work, and it should be encouraged and supported and not challenged in the sense of, you know, changing the way they do things. Same with great architects and great interiors teams. It's the coordination of those folks that is super important. And so we've been working very hard over these years to develop kind of an artful approach, I would say, towards how to pull all these things together. It's not just our way, you know, is the only way, you know, and I think that's a big part of how the residential space has to work in order for projects to be successful.
Well, I commend you for that. I think there's no question having an understanding of the difference of agreements, contracts, pressure, if you will, between commercial and residential. They're completely different. Yeah. You know, we've done both. They're completely different. Clients, projects, I mean, everything. Emotions are different in both projects, both industries. But because of the experience you had in legal and everything you broke it down, Keith, which is phenomenal, it definitely puts you in a position where you're such a resource, right? For not only the client, but the builder and just the whole project itself to be successful. How did building your own house, you touched on this earlier, you went through your own process building your own house. Maybe speak to the pain points. How did that give you, even though you had perspective, you know, restaurant and well-known, you know, companies and construction, you know, the whole array, the whole gamut there. You had your own experience. How has that impacted, you know, your operation to this point?
Yeah, no, it's, well, one of the, it's a fabulous question and it has lots of layers to it. You know, the first thing that happened, which has been super enriching is I didn't realize, and I learned through that process, the beginning of it, how fabulous and creative and exciting really quality residential work can be, you know, from the standpoint of the architects and interior design team, the build process. It is really fun, as you know, and it can be mind blowing in terms of excitement and creativity and teamwork. And as a human exercise or experience, it can be really, really fun. And don't tell any of my lawyer friends this, but it's a lot more fun often than hanging out with lawyers.
You know? I'm sure it is.
It's the truth. I mean, you know, and so that's a really positive thing. And I have always loved art and I've loved architecture. My dad has and mom have been art fans for a long time. My dad's a painter as well, an oil painter. And I've kind of grown up around that form of creativity, but not really the architecture and design side in the same way. So it's kind of like part of me in terms of interest, but I had no idea how exciting the design community would be. And now it's very much not only part of my professional life, but certainly a big part of my interest. You know, that's what I spend a lot of time studying and looking and reading and learning about is architecture. So that process kind of created a new part of me, which I thought, and I'm very grateful for. But on the kind of the blocking and tackling of the build, what I recognized pretty quickly, and I was fortunate to have a really wonderful architect design our home, and I learned a ton from him, and I went through the initial programming process that often happens, you know, okay, let's talk about how many bedrooms you'd like. Let's talk about, you know, the basic functions and programming of the house. There really wasn't, to my recollection, much conversation around budget. My wife and I were young at the time, relatively speaking. And, you know, we didn't understand the implications of the decisions that we were making and what would happen with respect to budget. It was kind of the 2008-2009 time frame as we were getting into the build process. And what happened is, you know, we designed to more or less our heart's content, and then we went out and went through a builder selection process. And I was one of the folks, which I try to prevent today, which is, you know, budget comes back through a selection process, and it's, you know, 50% above where we want it to be. And then we start going through this process of builder selection and of quote unquote value engineering, which again, you know, I have a different view for it. I used to have to think of it almost like a positive thing. Now it's like, it just means the mistakes have happened to get to the, you know? And, and I then employed learnings that I'd had through supporting commercial developers and other folks who I've interacted with in my kind of law life. And we were able to shore it up, made a great selection, had a great outcome. But in that, I learned about a lot of mistakes that I, as the owner, made in terms of establishing the right parameters, doing the right pre-construction, understanding the implications of choices on budget, understanding kind of what this will look like at scale in a way that that would have informed decisions being made better earlier. And it was really through that process that then friends and family initially said, hey, do you mind giving me a hand? And at the beginning, it was just kind of for fun. And then we turned it into a business about 7 or 8 years ago. And it really started from, okay, what is the issue? What is the problem that is here? Well, there's these areas of misalignment. There's the pre-construction piece. There's best practices and budgeting and how things are put together. And then there's the process of construction and the owner's relationship to that in terms of approval of payment applications, change orders, understanding site visits, documenting all those things. And it then turned into, well, how do we develop a series of professionally driven services to really support the owner's perspective with this broader view that a high-performing project means a high-performing team all the way around. And that's how it's evolved over the last, you know, let's say 3 or 4 years in particular.
I love how you brought up informed decisions earlier. You made that comment because I think we both probably have, I don't want to say PTSD, but we both have maybe an attitude towards VE. And it's not that it's a bad thing. I mean, in some cases, it's reality. It's part of making projects successful. But the problem is, as you mentioned, a lot of times that VE comes into play because we've missed the mark. There's mistakes made. There's questions not being asked, budgets not being done, whatever it is. There's been some targets that are missing. It becomes complicated. And what's really tough is there is a mentality, and I don't want to say mentality. I mean, in fairness, you know, this is why you have an expert such as yourself, Keith, is that if a client can really understand, if they can vet a good, honest contractor they're working with, the problem is that if they have the excitement in design and they see this amazing house and now they get the sticker shock of going to bid it and it's not reality, everything's deflated. It's very humbling. It's concerning. Projects don't happen. Maybe they've had strain on their marriage up to this point and now you have dealing with this and it just adds layers of conflict possibly. Whereas if it's done in the right in the beginning, then as you mentioned, when you look at a high-end residential project and you see the craftsmanship and the architecture and, you know, the excitement, I still, as even though I've been doing this for 20 years as a professional, you know, out of college, I still get excited when countertops go in, right? I get excited when cabinetry goes in and when the millwork and I see these ICF walls and retaining walls. And I mean, there's just, every phase is just so exciting. It's so fun to watch because there's so much craft that goes in. And, you know, last night we had a project we just finished, and the client invited the architect and the designer and us as the builder and our spouses, and we all had this amazing dinner. And to sit there and see the views of what was designed on paper to reality and see the finishes and kind of be there together, it's hard to explain emotionally what that's like for everyone involved. Like when it's truly done right, as you mentioned, Keith, it's just an amazing feeling overall.
It is. And I it's totally aspirational. I mean, what you say is exactly how it should be. And as we know, it's very challenging to achieve. And because what we're talking about is, you know, professionals that have lots of different, but unique experience sets, you know, the architectural mindset is unique to interiors, as to GC, as to the owner's perspective, as to, you know, each of these different component groups. And, you know, really, it's about curating that and then getting everyone to perform at a level that's really committed to each other. And, you know, from an owner's perspective, I would argue the build process is not sufficiently understood, and the complexity associated with it is not often sufficiently understood. And so, you know, there's often a simpler view of, hey, this is what's on the plan. Now it's just a matter of building it. Okay, you know, general contractor, you need to do X bids for this scope, this scope, this scope, and this scope. And then it just kind of happens. And as you and I know, that couldn't be farther from the truth in terms of what it really takes to build a well-crafted and well-built home. It takes not only each of those groups to do their own part, but it's how everything ties together. It's how everything marries to each other that makes something extraordinary. And that's where, you know, the selection and understanding of where we're really going matters. And then the coordination and teamwork really pays off in spades, because it's, you know, all of those the tens of thousands of little decisions that are made by all the people throughout the supply chain and the build process is what, you know, really makes magic happen. And there is nothing better when it executes beautifully. You know, even in a great project, there's always challenges, right? There's always things to figure out, and problem solving is, you know, if you love doing it, there's probably no place better than, I think, construction. The flip side of that, or maybe related to that, is that, you know, when done well, it's a super satisfying experience. And when you can help a client through the process in a way that is less stressful than it would otherwise be, less risky, you know, more cost effective, and leads to everyone having dinner at the end of a project, it's really a great feeling and a great outcome.
It's funny you say that, because problem solving, probably for you and I, it's a day-to-day opportunity. I guess we'll leave it at that. But yeah. As you look at, you mentioned that you had a great experience with the architect, you know, when you went through the first time. As you, you know, interview architects now for your clients, and you're kind of going through that vetting process with the design and architect team, how do your questions differ today than maybe when you went through it through the first time in your house, you know, based on the experience of building?
That's a great question. I would say a lesson that I've learned is that used to, earlier in a conversation, get into a conversation with design professionals about their fees and their costs. And I have learned, particularly in building extraordinary homes, that the conversation really should start with and should be about what is the client's vision and what is the architect's abilities and ability to execute on that vision, and how the relationship is evolving between the design professional and the owner, the ability to create that magic and that chemistry to really have a productive design experience is really where 80-90% of the conversation needs to be. The fee, while important, is a necessary part, but you know, excellent designers, excellent architects are going to be within a certain range, and there is a range, but relative to the cost of the homes that are being built, it's a relatively small component. And certainly some of our clients will say, hey, look, you know, we're really trying to execute on a budget. They're very, very specific on that. We honor that and advance that objective. But we're also open and we're often commonly are talking to our clients saying, hey, look, you know, you're going to be building this extraordinary home. If it's $5 a square foot or $10 a square foot, it is a rounding error relative to where we're going. The question really is, you know, who is the best person to design your objective and your dreams, really? And then we can work on getting the payment, you know, or the cost side of it, you know, shored up. I mean, I think I have certainly learned that the value of great architecture and the value of great design is incredibly worthwhile to not only the livability and the fun that the client's going to have in their project, but certainly to resale too. And the difference in cost of those services pales in comparison to the value created through great architecture and great design. And I've certainly seen that play out over and over again now over these projects and all these years. And I think that's something that's really important for people to know, because often folks who are building these really nice homes haven't done it before. They don't know that difference necessarily. And it's hard for them to recognize without some guidance and some objective, you know, support, what the real value difference will be through the selection of a good architect versus a great architect, or a good designer versus a great designer. And that doesn't mean the budget isn't then managed carefully and that everything has to be shored up and done well in terms of pre-construction and the build process. But what it does mean is that there's real value to great design and great architecture. And I'm a big proponent of that for our clients, because I've seen it turn out to have huge implications in terms of value creation.
Honestly, Keith, I don't think you could answer that better, you know, without knowing the question I was going to ask you. And I thought it's interesting because it reminded me of a few things. You know, we've worked with a wide array of architects and draftsmen, right? There is such a stark difference to a good architect for so many reasons. One, as a builder, just being maybe a little bit selfish, is that when you have really good building plans where the architect has visually gone through this and layered it, maybe they're using BIM modeling for sure. Souls, you know, they're looking at how the sun's going to come into the house, how that affects product going in, how that affects views of the surroundings, how that affects constructability, you know, ductwork going through truss systems in these highly complex modern homes that we're building. There's not a lot of space. And as much as we try to be as sophisticated and use blue beam and layer things on the front end, you know, it's hard until it goes vertical. And so having a good architect makes a huge difference. But the reason I bring that up is because you touched on this, the value, right, to the cost. And yes, understanding their fee structure is really important. But when you're dealing with good designers and good architects, there's kind of a small range, right, in that niche. And we had a project in North Scottsdale, and it's the day before July 4th. So this is July 3rd. It's an ICF house, insulated concrete form. And we were pouring the 5th, right? We were scheduled to pour the 5th. Client comes in for the holiday, says, I want to change 50% of the windows, right? In an ICF house. And fortunately, we had it poured. But logistically, there's rebar in those walls. You know, everything's formed. And it was a major change. And really what it goes down to, they may have saved a few dollars, which we weren't involved in that aspect of the selection of the architect. This is early on in my career. Had they picked a different architect, they would have factored in the views. So by the time it goes vertical, there's no surprise. You're not making a change because it's already been planned for. And essentially, this is what you're speaking to, Keith.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great example. That's a particularly stark one, right? Particularly with everything being forward. But, you know, I mean, there are so many areas within the decision process, the decision pathways of building a home like this, where information should be presented, considered, a decision made, and that process needs to happen, you know, over and over again in a in a organized fashion. And it is quite common that those considerations are not presented to the client or presented to the client in a way that they can take action on it, that create these kinds of circumstances. And it happens on so many levels throughout. You know, you can go through every element of a proposal, for example, every line item for every trade, and you can, we could go through together, right? And say, okay, here are the top five or 10 things that happen in each of these line items that leads to challenge, right? How do we make sure those are shored up? What are our checklists to make sure the right decisions have been made? And what that does, of course, is reduce the probability that those things will occur. And what it also does, in my view, is it narrows the areas of unknown so much that when you're in the build process, the owner can really focus on, and the architect, frankly, as part of the design or the build process, on unique opportunities that might present themselves. You know, and sure, all of the studies can make a huge difference. There's nothing like, you know, seeing through a window the first time, right? Or the framing of a window the first time. And I think it can really allow the process while you're in construction to be about, you know, maybe capturing an opportunity or making a little tweak here or a little tweak there that is really unique to the site, or you know, there's a cool boulder that's sitting in a certain area and maybe there's some integration or something interesting that can happen. And those kinds of opportunistic creative decisions generally can't be made if there's all kinds of other stuff that's happening because things weren't done right or comprehensively before construction started. And so, you know, I think it really comes down to discipline and pre-construction and really understanding the benefits of doing things correctly, because it is almost inconsistent with the emotions and the objective often of the owner. And so, because they're excited, and you know, we certainly understand that, and they want to get going. But as you and I know, it's the compounding effect of poor decision making during the build that is where the emotions can change on a project, right? And so, doing it right saves everyone, I think, a ton of aggravation and money, and also makes the process a lot more fun. And I think it makes it fun for everyone involved, like the whole group. You know, it's more fun from a build standpoint when we're executing on well-done plans. It's more fun from an interior standpoint when, you know, we're not revisiting the well over and over and over again. We're really focusing on some fun touches, or what is the countertop material going to be, or the final millwork selection, as opposed to the design of the millwork, right? And so the focus can be on the things that are really enjoyable, and the big decisions are behind us. And they, and again, you know, this is a custom home. If things change, we're here to support that. You're here to support that. That's okay. But it, that shouldn't be an excuse for poor planning. And I think that's what we find commonly, is that, you know, things are done a little bit more ad hoc, and hey, we'll figure it out as we go. And that's just a very unproductive and inefficient way to go, as you know so well.
Yeah, you recapped that very well, Keith. And there's so much truth to everything you shared, especially with that planning. And that ties into how we started the conversation. You've been so gracious with your time today, which I really appreciate. Just a wealth of knowledge. And it's very impressive, the brand and company you built over the years, Keith. And outside of the complication of the day-to-day and, you know, everything we're doing with construction, what do you do for fun?
So I... So a couple things. Well, I got two great kids and an awesome wife, and they're 12 and 13. And so we're chock full of all kinds of fun activities, and soccer and football and various things. And I'm super fortunate to have a wonderful wife, and who keeps us all you know, healthy and doing great things and having lots of fun together, and keeping our home life straight. And she's amazing. And then got an extended family here, my parents, mom and dad, and then my sister and her husband, Michael, who's one of my best buddies, and their children. So we have a nice family life here. I'm really into the arts. In the community generally, I'm involved with Scottsdale Arts and Greater Phoenix Leadership and a number of nonprofits. And so I enjoy that part a lot. And then I really love traveling. And so I've always been someone who's really loved traveling, and So we spend a lot of time planning for that and doing that as a family. And we spent last summer mostly in Asia, which or our trip in Asia, which was fabulous. This year we're going to be in the eastern portion of Europe, and we just really want to see the world. We want to expose our kids to that, and so love it. Love sailing, diving. I was a scuba diving instructor for a long time.
Oh, amazing!
Going back, so I've always loved lots of activities and doing fun things, and very very lucky guy.
Well, it sounds like it, and especially the travel aspect. It's neat that you get to take your kids and give them those experiences, you know, at a young age, which is super impactful. And it's well-deserved, right? I mean, just based on the experience that you've built and, you know, the knowledge and all that you bring to our industry, we greatly appreciate it. So for those listening, Keith, whether they're clients, whether they're contractors, whether they're designers, architects, looking to find a resource such as yourself, you know, hire you for your services, where can they find you?
Well, thank you for having me and for the gracious comments. So our website is www.advocate-rca.com. And that's for Advocate Residential Construction Advisors. And then you search it in Google, you know, it'll come straight in. And certainly reach out to our team. You can reach out to me personally, you know, off of the website. And we on there have lots of, you know, listing of our services and testimonials and the like. And then we've also recently started a YouTube channel that kind of describes what we do from a client's perspective and interior design and build perspective. And so you can learn more about us that way. And I'm very appreciative of the time. I admire what you're doing in this profession and the implementation and continued best practices of construction. And I've certainly learned a lot from you, and I'm grateful to be on the show and to share a little bit about what we do.
Well, Keith, I appreciate the comments as well. So thank you for making time. Can't thank you enough for the last hour you spent with us.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
If you get value from the show, please support us by giving a 5-star rating and review on whatever platform you listen to. And I also have a favor to ask. We've had some incredible guests that come on and share their wisdom, their knowledge about their business. So if you have friends or family members that could benefit from those episodes, please share it with them, as well as any other business owners that you're networking with that could get value from the podcast or certain episodes, please share those as well. Again, subscribe, make sure you're following. Any questions that you have, topics, we've had listeners reach out about certain guests that we should have on the show. Again, brad.l@aftconstruction.com. Email me for topics to address, guests that we should have on, and even if you think you'd be a great guest for the show. So again, thank you for all your support, and we'll see you next time.